Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Vic, do you think you might have ADHD?
Well, listeners keep emailing me telling me that they think I do, so probably.
Mind you, listeners also email us saying we talk too much about your mum's feet. So what do they know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I honestly had no idea about the connection between overdrinking and ADHD until we started this podcast.
About 40% of people that have had any sort of drinking issues also apparently have ADHD.
Whenever we chat to ex-drinkers, this comes up more than you'd believe. If you have ADHD or suspect you might, or just want to learn about this link, then we would encourage you to check out the I Have ADHD podcast.
It's the place where adults with ADHD find research-based information, validation, and tons of support.
This is the best way to feel less alone and hear some of the answers to the questions you've been sitting with for too long. You'll hear detailed descriptions of what it means to have ADHD and enjoy interviews with the foremost experts in the industry so that you don't have to read those ADHD books that are collecting dust on your shelf.
Yeah. Listen to the I Have ADHD podcast and learn how ADHD affects every aspect of your life. From the boardroom to the bedroom.
In the podcast, you'll also hear about their ADHD coaching program, which is called Focused. Focused is made up of three pillars: courses, coaching, and community. It is designed to help you build your own self-improvement program and is perfect for the ADHD brain.
And you can get $50 off the course just by using the code SOBER, S-O-B-E-R. So if you're tired of feeling stuck and don't know where to start, listen to the I Have ADHD podcast.
The kettle's boiled, Vic.
Great. Perfect timing. Just a dash of milk for me, please, mate.
Here you go. Shall we get started, then?
Have you ever woken up on a Sunday morning and said, I'm never drinking again, and then found yourself waving 50 bucks at a barman by happy hour?
Are you wondering why everyone else can stop at one, while you head to a dodgy after-party with a weird bloke called Disco Dave? If so, it might be time to take a deeper look at your relationship with your reliable social crutch, alcohol.
On each episode, we'll investigate our own dysfunctional dealings with booze and find out if it's possible to stop this deeply ingrained habit before things get too messy.
Yep, we're going to open up a shame shed of humiliating drinking stories to help you understand why waking up from a booze coma each weekend with a kebab sticking out of your top pocket might actually be negatively impacting your health.
Hamish and I are here to delve into what it's like being sober, an unwanted warts and all look into why giving up those cheeky pints or putting down those mummy wines will make you feel happier, help your anxiety and mental health, and turn you into the most sparkly, authentic version of you.
Won't that mean I become boring though, Vic?
Well, Hamish, we'll just have to wait and see. I'm Victoria Vanstone.
I'm Hamish Adams-Cairns.
And this is Sober Awkward.
So, Vic, how's this week been?
Yeah, not bad. I took little Sandy to the dog groomers yesterday.
Rock and roll.
Yeah, she is rock and roll, my life. She has gone from a drunk dog to sober dog.
Explain.
Well, she just looks kind of like a bit dishevelled when she's got long hair.
Right.
And then she goes into the groomers and she comes out and she just looks slick.
It's and like she's young, too, right? Dogs, yeah, yeah. After haircuts, yeah. It's like years falling off them.
Yeah, they're so sweet because you can see their little faces again. They look so happy. And I had Freddie with me. We're in the posh, stylish canine, it's called,
okay.
In the posh dog groomers. And Sandy walked out and Fred pointed and said really loudly, Sandy looks like a penis dog. I was like, oh, that's nice, Freddie. What does that mean? I think he's got the words sausage and penis mixed up.
Right.
Because I think he thought the word sausage or wiener dog or sausage dog. And I said, what's a penis dog? It's a sausage dog, he said. So yeah, that was quite funny in
that
front of the posh lady at the dog groomers. Yeah. I blame his sweary brother for the penis comment, quite honestly, because George does like to swear and probably...
I thought George was allowed to one day a year.
Yes.
Is he now drifting off into other days?
Well, he's starting to come into other days, his swearing a bit. He doesn't say F or any terrible words, but there is the odd shit coming out every now and again. But I don't mind it, quite honestly. I'm a bit of a swearer.
You're meant to be strict about swear words, but yeah. I guess...
It is funny sometimes.
And if he says, sorry, I swore, he says, Dad, I blame Mum.
Nice.
Yeah. Because he says, well, my mum's a swearer. He's like, I'm influenced by you, Mum. You made me. Mm. I blame you for me being such a sweary child.
I've never heard my mum swear, and I've heard my dad say shit once.
Yeah, right.
My dad's more something goes wrong, and he's like, rats.
Rats. Okay, that's good.
Rats. Yeah. Or bother.
Oh, bother, that's so posh.
Yeah, isn't it?
I think my dad, I heard him call a tin of paint once, you bastard. He tipped over a tin of paint, you bastard.
Sonny, no, Liz and I were trying to make Sonny laugh yesterday, and I swear he went, ah, dear.
Oh, sweet. He probably
little
did.
1 year old, ah, dear. Which is both a little bit, what's the word when you
sarcastic.
Like put someone down?
It's sort of sympathetic to your sad behaviour.
Yeah. Oh, nice try. Ah, dear, they don't get it.
Yeah, so blaming, me getting blamed for the swearing is a little bit about what we're talking about, isn't
it? Nice link.
Thanks, Hamish.
Today's episode is all about a little game I like to call the blame game.
Yep. When we go sober, we often find ourselves with the time and energy to reflect on why we overdrank.
In fact, we encourage you to do this as part of what we call the work.
The work.
I don't think we labelled it the work.
Yes, no, it's been called the work, I think. We'll call it the work.
We'll claim it.
There's actually a brilliant documentary called The Work on one of these crazy channels that you get online.
What are these kids?
Yeah, these
kids ones?
These youth channels. No, there is a brilliant programme about men doing the work together. Fascinating. Watch it. It's about men in prison.
Sounds like gay porn.
Yeah, it's not gay porn. It's actually really good. I don't quite know what to say to that, Hamish. Like anything, though, it's important that you strike a balance in order to do this effectively.
This takes real skill. We're all very good at finger-pointing and making our excuses as to why we drank the way we did.
I'm not very good at finger-pointing, Hamish, because I have a stumpy finger.
Yeah, well, you've got to choose your better finger.
It's not aggressive when I point. It just, people go, oh, that's sad. Look at that sad little finger.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have a better point, to
You're
be honest
right.
with
it does
you.
Take the edge off.
Yeah, it does.
Maybe that's why your children don't respect you.
Yeah. Could be why they swear all the time, yeah. What we find hard is taking ownership and accepting that some of the responsibility is actually ours to own.
We don't say this in order to instill feelings of shame or guilt. We understand that for many, alcoholism is an addiction and a disease. What we are instead trying to get at is the fact that incessantly blaming others for our overdrinking does not achieve anything. It will not serve you in helping you get and stay sober. Now, Vic, I feel as if with you being the more experienced sober person who has also done more of the work...
Wait a second. I am also the more experienced drunk person, I would say there. I love it that you focused on the positive.
What I'm saying is you're older than me.
Yeah, I'm older than you, and I was very, very much more drunk than you.
Yes, but you've definitely done more work than me.
Okay, yes.
Not career. I haven't had much of a career.
No, not you haven't either.
We're getting caught. What I'd love to hear is who or what you blamed for your overdrinking.
I'm turning the page because it is so funny. My list, isn't it, Hamish?
It's a half page.
It is a Settle half in, page. Folks. Settle in for this. I didn't really think I blamed anything or anyone, but when I sat down and thought about it, it was incredible how much I blamed outside sources for my drinking. It was actually incredible.
Funny you say that, because this episode was inspired by my reading your book.
Well, yeah, because there is a section called blame in there, isn't it?
Well, there was a line where your therapist said, like, stop blaming other people. And you're like, oh, yeah, that was a penny drop moment for you.
And totally was.
Yeah. Here is a page of people that you blame.
Here is a page. Not even people, it's things and people. It's a mixture of things. When I was a drinker, I blamed other drinkers. I had mates that I thought were a bad influence on me, people I wanted to impress. I actually chose people as mates because they were fun, which really meant that they drank far more than me. And therefore, my drinking didn't seem so bad.
Hiding.
So it was easy to blame them and go, oh, I always go out with them and they always drink loads and therefore I have to drink loads. Mm-hmm. So then it wasn't my fault. And you could also blame them on the hangover as well. So it was like, oh no, I didn't mean to get this drunk. It was because of them. So therefore I had blame the next day too, which is also good. I also blamed environments. I knew that going to a rave meant getting messy. A festival meant a 3-day bender. The pub meant a possible lock-in and the wedding meant drinking through hangovers and getting back on it. Like it was rude not to be in those places. I mean, it's like wetting a baby's head or drinking at a wake. I blamed situations and environments for the fact that I overdrank in them, which is ridiculous, really. It's like blaming a building. I was blaming buildings for my drinking habit. That is how ridiculous it is. Crazy. I literally thought, I don't want to drink tonight, but we're going to a gig, so I have to. I blamed the barman for not cutting me off, or the pub landlord for letting me stay past time.
Nice.
Yeah. I blamed the costs of drinks if they were cheap.
And yet you moved to Thailand.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheapest drinks in the world. I blamed the weather. If it was hot, I had cold beers. If it was cold, I sat in a cozy pub with a fire. If it was foggy, rainy, or if there was a storm, I actually blamed Mother Nature for my drinking habit.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Where is she? She's got a lot to answer
she
for.
She does
that
have
Mother
a lot
Nature.
To answer for.
I blamed late trains, football matches, living near an off licence. I blamed holidays, jobs, traditions, foreign custom, when in Rome, etc. I blamed everything. I blamed partners. I blamed tsunamis. I blamed anxiety. Always pushing the blame elsewhere. It took away me having to deal with it. It sounds awful, but towards the end, I blamed my baby.
For your drinking.
Oh my God, this is horrible to say this. Make me feel sick.
I reckon people relate to this.
I felt like having a kid was hard. That was how toxic my internal messaging was. I blamed the life of a stressful mother. So I was like, I'm working so hard. I've handed my, you know, my life over to this child. I deserve a reward. Mm. So I blamed having a kid that made my drinking increase. Rather than look in the mirror and see the true culprit, of course the culprit was me. But I was saying, no, being a mum's hard. I've got to do this. I'm allowed. So after quitting, I actually started down this road of blaming my upbringing on my boozing. Mm-hmm. That was actually a bit silly, which I'm going to tell you a bit about later. But when I got sober, I actually started to blame culture and the government.
The government?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Is that enough for you, Hamish?
Yeah, it's about 22 minutes.
It's literally about 20 points, isn't it?
Yeah.
And crazy.
What you've done there is you've got numerous points on every point.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like, I blame tsunamis. No. Like, I blame tsunamis.
There's literally, government. I think it's probably 100 things
in
there.
100 things. We could have done that as a count now.
I could have done. Damn it.
So during your drinking years, did you ever feel self-pity or as if you didn't stand a chance because of the things that you've just listed there?
I was such a party girl that I truly believed it wasn't me with the problem.
Right.
It was the situation. The culture, the normalisation, the generational factor. I never felt self-pity because I thought I was doing the right thing. I was really brainwashed by alcohol. I didn't see it as an outside force forcing me to do it because otherwise it felt like I was turning on my best friend. Like I literally felt like if I'd said bad-mouthed alcohol that I was saying something blasphemous.
Right.
Yeah. It was like saying, I fucking hate my best friend, which just wasn't in my vocabulary to do that.
Yeah.
I couldn't hate the one thing I loved. It was impossible. So all I could say was, well, it was Glastonbury weekend or I was with Party Pete. Blaming meant I never had to self-reflect. It made my problem drinking last longer and it caused me to never pause and reconsider what I was actually doing to myself.
So during those initial therapy sessions, which sort of ended up changing your life, did your therapist ever go, hey, stop, you need to start taking ownership for your own behaviour? Like, can you be as brutal as that as a therapist, or is there like a more flowery way of putting it?
No, I think there was a flowery way, but I think it was weeks that led up to that point of me having a sort of self-understanding of what was going on with me. It was a long time for me to go actually to her, oh yeah, it was my hand reaching in the fridge for that bottle of wine. It was my hand flipping off the bottle top and slamming my fist down on a bar, getting another round. It was me taking the actions. It didn't matter what had caused the actions, whether it was trauma or all of these other issues that it could have been. It always came down to my hand going in front of my eyes. I know that sounds weird, but I always imagine it when I think about it. It was my hand reaching out from my body, attached to my arm and my shoulder. That is where the responsibility lay, between my shoulder and my hand. I had to be the one that was holding the bottle at the end of the day. It wasn't anyone else pouring it down my throat. It was me. Accepting responsibility and letting go of blame at that point and understanding that point was when I was able to change. It was when my drinking habit actually ended. I accepted that I played a role in the issues that I was having. I don't believe I was physically addicted to alcohol when all this was going on. I think I was mentally addicted. So it wasn't a matter of rehab or detox for me. It was about rewiring my brain to understand I could make better choices for myself. Have you ever felt that about anything, Haim? About saying, like, it's like putting your hand in the limp ball packet and going, do I need this?
Yeah.
Or shoving a bit of cake in your mouth, or thinking you should go for a run and then not doing it. It's like there's a moment where you can make a choice, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's interesting. I never knew I had that choice. I was like, oh, there's a craving. Oh, I need to do it. I'm just going to do it. Mm-hmm. I never stopped to pause in that moment.
It's hard. If your hand is on a lint ball,
yeah,
it's very difficult to not open it and eat it.
Yes.
It's a split second. You're like, yeah. Ah, well, I'm holding it now.
Yeah.
Might as well eat it.
Yeah.
And then it's always two or three.
And then we're talking about an addictive drug on top of that. Yeah, so yeah. It's not just your brain going, I want this, but it's also the addiction plays a part as well. Mm-hmm. I truly had got to the point where my drinking, even though I hated it, but was so pickled that I had to carry on. I was so deep in mental addiction. And because I blamed everyone apart from me, it took a lot of work to undo. I feel lucky I managed to get to the point before physical addiction, actually. I know that's a different and more intricate situation mentally and medically for other people. But I guess this is just my experience. I think we'd love to hear from some people, Hamish, that have blamed other people throughout their drinking periods and struggle with a physical addiction and see how this blame game works for them, because I do think it's another story. Basically, after therapy, I understood why I drank. There were some outside factors for me, like the bullying situation, self-confidence issues, and people-pleasing. For you, it could be anything from abuse, ADHD, body image, sexuality, anything that may have caused you any level of trauma. So I understand how blaming in some of these situations could be really difficult to dispel. What about you, Hamish?
This is such a sensitive subject, so I want to underline the fact that we can only share from our own lived experience. Neither of us reach the level of what society would call an alcoholic, so we can't pretend to understand what that's like. You know, both of us recently read Matthew Perry's book. I don't think anyone would judge him for like going, well, hang on, there's no blame here.
Yeah.
I have a disease that I cannot control. So I understand that, but this is just our stories. So I didn't realise what caused my drinking until I went sober.
Interesting.
And I reckon no one really takes the time to even stop and think about it until you go sober, because why would you?
Yeah.
I drank because everyone else did. I had an older brother, so I wanted to appear cool to him and his friends when I followed him onto big school and sort of step into his shoes and still be a cool younger brother. I was in the cool group, but I was never necessarily the best looking or the sportiest or the biggest hit with the ladies. I was lucky enough to be the funny one, and I was more than happy to drink in order to fit in, despite the fact that I was never really very good at it. It's now only that I'm sober that I'm able to look back and say that although I am and have always felt like a self-confident guy, drinking because everyone else did is the opposite of confident.
Interesting point, Hamish.
Of course, sometimes I drank because I wanted to, but not always, particularly at the start. I drank because I was bored and wanted to rebel in those early days. I guess my character and personality wasn't fully formed, and drinking was kind of a lazy way of creating an interesting personality. Today, I'm proud that I'm able to have as much fun sober as I did when I was drinking. It is different, but it is still fun. With that being said, I've lived a privileged life. I have no idea how I would have reacted to something like childhood trauma or abusive parents or even a broken home.
I find this so interesting, Hamish, that we're talking about me who is the binge drinker. I know we go on and we stop and pause and think about this entire topic sometimes. We have to, because we're talking about me, the problem drinker. We're talking about alcoholism, this vast end of the spectrum, which is actually a smaller amount of people. People we're talking about are more like us, actually.
Right.
And you, who we consider the normal drinker, the non-problem drinker, yet you couldn't see the error of your ways until you got sober. And that just shows the sort of clarity you get, the sort of insight you get into yourself, even as somebody who drinks not very often when you get sober. It's interesting that you now can see that about yourself, that you never even considered yourself having a problem. Of course you didn't. Mm-hmm. But there are some aspects of drinking that we start when we're teenagers or when we get to university or in our 20s and 30s that we do because we think we have to. And I think that's the whole point in our podcast, Hamish, is like, why did we do that? Mm-hmm. What were the real reasons? Was it just because everyone else did it? Was it because we lack self-confidence? It's only when you get sober you are capable of looking back and going, this is where I was going wrong. Maybe I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
Did I have to go through this coming of age thing? Did I have to get pissed to make everybody like me? Probably not. So it's just part of this massive culture. We can blame the culture a little bit here, I think. Mm-hmm. I know we're trying to not talk about blaming things, but that culture has such a massive influence on us growing up. We just think it's something we have to do. And maybe going forward generationally, it's not something our kids will have to worry about.
I think it's an interesting question to ask yourself, why do I drink? even if you're sober, obviously you're probably going to ask yourself that. But even, let's say you're 20 and you're listening to this, yeah, and you've got no intention of giving up alcohol, that's fine. But ask yourself, why do I drink?
Yeah.
Because it might answer something to you about your character or something you need to work on. I think, yeah, it's a good question to ask yourself wherever you are in your sobriety or not.
Because I think people just go, well, I like it. I'm like, well, why do you like it? It's because it's making your character change, because it makes you forget something. When I, funnily enough, when I see people out, I went out the weekend, I saw people downing cocktails one after the other, like spending so much money, one drink after another. I was like, and I just thought, what's the point? What are you doing that for? You're just numbing out. I sat next to you an hour ago and we had a lovely conversation. Now you're not there anymore. Like, what's the point? What are you doing to yourself? It's taken me a long time to get to that point where I just don't understand alcohol anymore. I can't, like, comprehend why anybody wants to do that to themselves, like, wreck themselves. It seems odd now. And I can see the reasons why. It's because they're stressed or they're, you know, they've had a hard day or, and they think it's what makes them feel better. But I know for a fact, because I've been sat with that person for an hour already, and they've been perfectly all right, and then they just sort of descend into this bleary mess. I'm like, why are you doing this to yourself? Of course I don't say anything. I just leave. I know when to leave. But it's those questions, that's I guess why it's called being sober curious, that we ask ourselves, is like, why did I drink? Why do I drink? And what's it doing to me? It's a really good question to sit down with a pen and paper and make a list, because I think you'll find those reasons probably won't be good enough to carry on. Interesting. It's easy for us to sit here and tell you not to blame others for your drinking, but that might be a bloody hard thing for you to do in practice.
The obvious question to ask is, why do overdrinkers pass the buck and play the blame game? A good place to start is to remind ourselves that alcoholism is a real and challenging medical condition that requires professional substance abuse treatment to overcome.
Fancy a bit of science, Hamish?
Bring it on.
When someone develops an alcohol use disorder, they experience a significant alteration in how their brain functions that limits the ability to control alcohol use. This can cause us to blame our spouses or others for things not in their control.
This was put most eloquently by the Right Step Houston website. Houston website, which says, to answer the questions of why alcoholics blame others, we first have to look at the link between denial and alcoholism.
Denial is a cousin of blame, serving as a first line of defence for many alcoholics who are reluctant to face their problems head on or take responsibility for the issues they are causing in their lives and to those.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Vic, do you think you might have ADHD?
Well, listeners keep emailing me, telling me that they think I do, so probably.
Mind you, listeners also email us saying we talk too much about your mum's feet. So what do they know?
Yeah, fair enough.
I honestly had no idea about the connection between overdrinking and ADHD until we started this podcast.
About 40% of people that have had any sort of drinking issues also apparently have ADHD.
Whenever we chat to ex-drinkers, this comes up more than you'd believe. If you have ADHD or suspect you might, or just want to learn about this link, then we would encourage you to check out the I Have ADHD podcast.
It's the place where adults with ADHD find research-based information, validation, and tons of support.
This is the best way to feel less alone and hear some of the answers to the questions you've been sitting with for too long. You'll hear detailed descriptions of what it means to have ADHD and enjoy interviews with the foremost experts in the industry so that you don't have to read those ADHD books that are collecting dust on your shelf.
Yeah. Listen to the I Have ADHD podcast and learn how ADHD affects every aspect of your life, from the boardroom to the bedroom.
In the podcast, you'll also hear about their ADHD coaching program, which is called Focused. Focused is made up of three pillars: courses, coaching, and community. It is designed to help you build your own self-improvement program and is perfect for the ADHD brain.
And you can get $50 off the course just by using the code SOBER, S-O-B-E-R. So if you're tired of feeling stuck and don't know where to start, listen to the I Have ADHD podcast. Is around them.
Alcoholics may find themselves in denial about their addiction because it protects them from the painful reality that alcohol has taken control over their lives. Denial and blame both come from a place of fear. These fears often include admitting they have a problem and the consequences of an alcohol use disorder.
Instead of dealing with fear, working to overcome it and trying to heal, we show signs of denial or blame others by lying or being defensive.
So let's unpack those quickly one by one, starting with blame. We may say that the actions or words of others are the reason we need to drink. These are self-told lies the alcoholic uses to justify their addictive, harmful behaviour.
So true. Or lying. To avoid getting help for their alcoholism, a person may hide or lie about their alcohol use, so they do not have to face the reality of their addiction.
And being defensive. Somebody living with an alcohol use disorder is likely to become defensive if you try to confront them about their drinking. They may attempt to change the subject, deny they have a problem, or blame a loved one for their drinking.
What is the effect of playing the blame game? To put it simply, which we always like to do because both of us are a bit simple.
A little bit.
Blaming others can help the overdrinker maintain their drinking habit. Of course, Hamish. How? Well, because the blaming allows them to convince themselves that they're not responsible for how their addiction impacts their lives or their family and friends around them.
That's right. By blaming others, they start to believe they have no power over their life and decisions because they are made out to be someone else's fault.
So true.
Vic, I know you grew up in a house where there were loads of parties. Do you blame some of your drinking on your parents or sort of environment that you grew up in? Or not?
I did go down that road for a very short time in therapy, in a room on my own with a therapist. I did question all of that, of course, because part of my growing up is part of my life. I love my parents very, very much, and I know that they would never, ever do anything to hurt me. And they never showed me anything but support throughout my life. I understand they're from a different era, perhaps where, you know, there wasn't much information about the harm of alcohol or what it was doing. And, you know, they didn't have access to media like we do now. So they didn't really know that perhaps I was absorbing some of their behaviours. There was never any alone drinking in my house, never any sad drinking. It was always very frivolous and it gave them loads of funny stories. So of course, I never thought anything negative about it. I think it did play a role in my overconsumption. I think my mum is probably the only person that can drink a cheap glass of sparkling wine faster than me, quite honestly. Yeah. But their drinking never progressed and mine did, and that's the difference, and that's where I had to take the responsibility. I could have carried on drinking like them, but I didn't. Mm-hmm. I took it further. Yeah. I went deeper into it than they ever did, and I drank for different reasons than them. They never drank because they were sad or lonely or any of these things or trauma. I did. That's the difference, I think. After therapy, I did have to dig deep. What did I get from blaming them? There was a little bit of generational blame in there. I chose to put aside the generational factor because I know that they love me and they didn't know that I would step up the drinking to a toxic level. If they knew that I was going to do that, they would never, ever drunk around me, I don't think. They would never, ever have shown me that that was okay if they thought it would be a problem for me. That's not something my parents ever, ever planned on doing. I knew putting blame on my family would hurt people. I didn't feel like I wanted to fracture any relationships. All I know is that my parents brought me up in a way that made me strong enough to face my problems, and I'm thankful for them for that. This will be very different for everybody.
When you say you blamed them for a short period of time, how short was that?
Oh, it was
when did you catch yourself and go, oh, this isn't helpful?
It was a minute in therapy where the therapist said, do you think your parents had an influence over your drinking? And I said, probably. She said, how is that going to help you moving forward? I said, it's not. Yeah. That was literally the end of it. I knew it wasn't their fault. It's nobody's fault. It was a cultural, generational. It was what was going on in the era. You know, they may have made wiser decisions. They knew that later on I was going to be this over drinker, but that was, you know, that was my problem. I'd moved out of home when it really spiraled out of control. You know, I do drink like my mum drinks. You know, we're very quick drinkers, we're gulpers, that's why we have that nickname. But it's a very, very different style of drinking. And no matter what, Hamish, it doesn't matter who's to blame. That is what this is about, this podcast. It doesn't matter at the end of the day. I had to let that go and take responsibility myself. That was the only way that I was going to move forward with any of this. Sitting in the past and saying it was him, her, they did this, they got drunk at a party and I copied them and they shouldn't have done this. It was a complete farce. It was just too much of a head fuck for me to even take on. So I just decided to go, no, this isn't their fault. This is up to me. If it's up to me, I have the choice to change. And that's where everything changed for me.
Yeah. The only reason I ask is I reckon most people that call what we call the blame game would go, parents, upbringing, partner. I reckon those are probably the three biggest things that people blame.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear, you know, someone that did, like you did for a short period of time, going, nip it in the bud.
Yeah.
This is not serving me at all.
Going down that road, even the thought of it felt very toxic to me. Yeah. I was like, I don't want to blame these people. I love them. I don't want to hurt anybody. This isn't about anybody else. This is about me, my husband, and my kids. This is private and personal. And if I'm going to change, it has to come from my heart. And that I have to stop that arm reaching out into the fridge. My parents aren't going to stop that. Yeah. People from my past and family and, you know, culture's not going to stop that. Environment's going to stop that. Not going to stop that. It's going to be from me. So that's why I had to like really hone it in and realise that I was at the epicentre of my problems. Yeah.
How were you able to do that without feeling shame or guilt?
Because I was under the influence. I was under the influence of a very, very potent drug for all of those years. I don't have any regret or shame, which is why I'm able to do this podcast and talk about all these things, because that is not who I am. That is a person who was under the influence of a very, very harmful drug.
So you can blame alcohol, basically.
I blame it on culture, government, and alcohol. Like, it's the government that's saying, this is okay, here you go, drink. It's media. It's outside sources that I can't go up against, almost.
Right.
So what's the point? What's the point of me marching outside the government buildings to go, you made me into an overdrinker? Or, you know, I can't blame the 70s. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't blame all these different eras there where drinking's been okay. It always has to come back to me, because I'm not in control of anything else. Mm. I'm only responsible for my own actions.
Interesting.
Yeah. I would say that anyone that has ever had an alcoholic drink lives with stories and memories that bring them joy and laughter, and also shame and guilt. Those are two terrifying feelings that we generally want to avoid. By blaming others, we are able to distance ourselves from those feelings. Admitting the blame means admitting to shame and guilt, of course.
It sounds to me as if everyone has their reasons for drinking and overdrinking. There's no doubt about that. But to simply point the finger and say, well, my parents were pissheads, for example, is not going deep enough. It's not looking at the root of the problem. In my example, which is certainly not true of my parents, perhaps you felt like you had to compete for their attention because theirs was often distracted by alcohol. So are you an attention seeker? Did alcohol bring you the attention you sought out? And what work can you do today to heal that? Now, I'm not a therapist, clearly, but that sounds to me like the conversation that needs to be had with a professional. Just blaming your drinking parents doesn't fix anything.
That's so true. Now, we understand that some of our listeners are not over drinkers, but instead live with someone who they love that is struggling with an alcohol use disorder. So with you in mind, we would love to focus on how to live with someone who is playing this blame game and living in denial.
Firstly, this is a bloody difficult situation to find yourself in, and your instinct might be to argue or fight back, but this is rarely helpful. In fact, it's only more likely to increase their defensiveness. Instead, you should try and remain calm and try and choose a moment when they're in a good mood to begin the conversation. Be prepared to give specific examples of concerning behaviour, and always come back to the fact that you are having this conversation because you care about them.
Here are a few ways that the South Jersey Recovery website recommends that you try. Avoid enabling behaviour. Be wary of not trying to fix their problems. Becoming codependent or covering up their mistakes. This can make you feel as if you're helping, but it will make it comfortable for them to continue drinking and increase their denial.
The second point is, don't make excuses. Along with enabling behaviour comes the tendency for loved ones to make excuses for the alcoholic's behaviour. You may tell yourself or others that your partner needs to drink to cope with stress, or you may blame others for their problems. This makes it easy for them to remain in denial. Don't play the blame game on their behalf.
Can you hear those birds outside?
Yeah, it's quite nice, isn't it?
It's a lovely noise, isn't it? Care for yourself. Living with someone in denial can be quite distressing. Of course it will be. So it's important to practice self-care to maintain your own well-being. I would say this is the most important one, Hayne, wouldn't you? This may involve journaling to reduce your stress, taking time for exercise, or even reaching out for therapy yourself. You need to be feeling your best in order to help anyone. I totally believe in that one.
I only just came across this. I can't remember what the phrase is, but basically there is Alcoholics Anonymous for friends and families.
Mm.
which I think we need to do a whole episode on, because anyone will tell you that the friends and families of an alcoholic often bear the brunt of most of the actions and the pain.
When I watch an episode of Intervention, they often take a person into rehab at the end of the episode, but they always offer a family rehab as well for the people that are related. They take them off somewhere else and they have counselling for their own enabling issues. It's fascinating.
We need to focus on that.
Also, I think we need to say here too, let's take the word blame out of this equation a little bit. It's not a nice word and it doesn't really solve anything, actually. Blaming yourself and others is futile. I would prefer to say taking some responsibility and working from there. It's a more empathic way at looking at an issue. After all, we are all a work in progress, and this shows that we're willing to be curious in the roles we play in our own behaviours.
Well said, Vic, for once. As ever on this podcast, these are serious, life-changing issues that need to be overcome to live a fulfilled, sober life. It might be that nobody is to blame, but you have a disease called addiction. We can only help to an extent through this podcast. Your loved ones can do everything they can to make you feel supported too, but at the end of the day, it is up to you to reach out for professional help.
Yeah. There is no shame in asking for help here. Let's look at the bigger picture. Long-term health, strong relationships, and a fulfilled life. The price for it all? Reaching out for help, that's it.
The good news is that there is more help out there today than there has probably ever been for drinkers. There is something for everyone.
Therapy.
AA.
Online therapy like BetterHelp. You can do it over Zoom.
Men's and women's support groups.
Masses of literature, documentaries and films, everything.
And also, of course, our cuppa community.
Just remember, this is a disease. This does affect millions of people around the world. And it does require your full attention and professional help if it's affecting your life and the life of those around you.
All we ask is that you give sobriety a go. See how you feel in a month or 6 months or a year's time. See the effect it has on your mind, your life, your relationships. Let's get well and focus on the important things in life, shan't we?
Yeah, why not?
Vic, do you blame people for things in your sobriety? Like, do you still play the blame game even after the booze has gone away?
Of course I do.
Tell me.
Well, obviously when I go to a party and people are getting a bit tipsy, I say my kids have massive diarrhoea.
Yeah.
Blame the kids.
Blaming the kids is the biggest perk of parenting.
Yeah, it's like a parenting must, isn't it? You can get away with anything. Kid's diarrhoea. Oh, sorry, he's got a bit of a temp.
Yeah.
It's like a line that comes out of me without even thinking. Yeah. Oh, sorry, no, I can't make it. George's got a bit of a temp.
When another parent uses that excuse to you, do you think they're lying to me?
Yeah. I know they're lying.
Yeah.
But I don't mind, because they're doing it for the same reasons I am. So okay, I'm like, yeah, they're playing the blame game. That's okay. I, this week, blamed muscle gain on my weight gain.
Yeah. Sure. You just got really strong.
I've got really strong. That's nothing to do with me eating more.
No.
It's to me, my muscle has really...
I ate a lot of donuts this week. I must be really strong.
I must have got more muscle. Yeah. I blame work on why I forget school events all the time. So I forgot Grandparents' Day at kindy last week.
Is that
week.
A thing?
Yeah. So the grandparents come in for the day, spend a day with the kids. Fred was the only person that didn't have his grandparents there. I felt terrible.
And you blame work.
Yeah, I said, oh, sorry, I'm working too hard.
That's it. And for someone that doesn't have a job, that is hard to do.
I know. And actually, I blame you for making me want to be more positive all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm struggling. That is tough.
I hate
to turn you around into a really positive American.
Yeah. You want me to step into everything with a fucking smile on my face. Oh, yeah, I'm so looking forward to doing one of our live shows. Isn't it going to be brilliant, Hamish, when I'm dying inside?
Well, hang on, because I got a little victory this week.
You did.
Vic texted me about 3-4 days ago and said, hey, I think we should sign up to this speaker website.
Yeah.
I was like, let's just take a minute here. You suggesting we do more live shows.
I know that I've got to get out of my comfort zone. If anyone's got a corporate company that wants me and Hamish to come and talk there,
we'll do
a sober show about alcohol in the workplace, we would love to.
That's it.
Yeah.
We charge whatever Anthony Robbins charges.
Yes, same. We charge the same.
About that.
$1 million a pop.
That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine.
Plus accommodation and flights.
Yeah, first class.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to slum it.
Do you play the blame game?
I blame you for my sobriety.
Yeah, fair enough.
Which we still don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that you've been
to. I would say it's a good thing, but you would probably say it's a bad thing. Yeah, carry on.
I blame bad luck on my career not taking off.
You say that. I read that one last night. Yeah. I was like, Hamish, you've got this thing about your career. I think we need to do an episode on your emotions over over your career. Because what is bad about your career? Like, you actually host, I sent him a message about this this week. You actually host one of the most popular podcasts in the world.
Yeah, I know. I'm blind to it, though.
Yeah, you're blind to it. You work for a lovely company with the people that you love.
That's true.
You work for the radio as well. You have some incredible jobs. Like, you are amazing. You have a beautiful family.
You're very sweet.
Yeah, but you have this thing inside your heart that tells you you're not doing well enough.
I do have that.
We need to go and see a counsellor about this, Hamish. Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm incredibly lucky in life.
Yes.
A lot of luck falls my way. Everyone that knows me, like, that guy gets lucky all the time with things. Yeah. But career, I'm like, maybe just I spend all my luck on, like, life.
Yeah.
And then I don't have any left for career, like, right time, right place, career luck.
It's going to happen,
right.
Hamish.
It's actually right.
It's going to happen.
But what does that mean, happen? Anyway, this is for a
next year.
I also blame, I don't know if you do this, I blame Australia for lots of stuff. I think the perception that I have of the UK, having not lived there for basically the best part of the last 10 years, I think the UK is now dreamland. Yes. And I blame Australia for not being the UK.
Right, okay. Does
that make sense? If I have a bad day, I'm like, well, you know, it's because Australia does this and that and that.
Yeah, because it's too hot. Yeah. I blame Australia for a lot.
But my wife and child is Australian. I lived here for years and really like it.
I blame them.
Mainly, I don't blame my wife and child for enough.
I blame my child for everything. I don't blame my children when I'm out.
I haven't been
tapping into
that. I say
it's that Sonny's nasty piece of work.
That's right. You can blame Sonny for having diarrhoea if you want to get out.
Yeah, he's got diarrhoea. It's that horrible, Hamish's horrible little kid. He's made us all ill again.
Yeah. No, I need to start blaming him for more.
Yeah. That's right. That's what they're there for, Hamish. You've got to tap into that a bit more, for sure. Let's finish this episode with a review sent in from one of our listeners, a quote and a disappointing affirmation.
Okay, so first up, the review, which was left by an anonymous... Was this you again?
Yes,
anonymous
me again.
Is always you, isn't it?
Hi!
Simon! Terry! Okay, so they've written...
Terry.
They feel like friends who give good advice because they've been through it themselves. That's the title. The title's always very good. I like
it. Oh, that's a nice title.
That's the sort of thing you would write.
Yeah.
Anyway, the main body of it. I just adore this podcast so much. There isn't any negativity pointed towards us drinkers, but plenty pointed at the poison called alcohol. The fact that they don't try to patronise us as listeners certainly means a lot. Plus, their banter never fails to make me laugh at times.
At times.
At times. As I worried that sobriety would be tightly laced, guarded, or a wall made up of the big book. Yeah, Sober Curious doesn't have that old stodgy feel at all. The cover community is very helpful if you want a social space without having to worry about a bunch of triggers and full of people wanting to beat this same awful disease.
What a lovely review. How nice, Hamish, that we can be a part, play our small little part in the sobriety.
Thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous.
You always write nice ones, Anonymous.
Yeah. For the quote, it's one from Robert Anthony, who says, when you blame others, you give up your power to change.
That's quite good.
That is
basically what happened to me. Genuinely inspiring quote.
That actually resonates.
Resonates on your journey.
Resonates on my journey. That's basically what I said in a very, very long way in one sentence.
We often do that with the quotes.
We do, don't we?
We babble on for an hour. Let's do the quotes first.
Then we'll go, actually, let's not fucking bother doing this podcast because that quote says exactly what we're going to say.
Yeah. Okay, I'll bring us back down with a disappointing affirmation. It's okay not to be okay. Just remember, no one gives a shit.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I give a shit though, Hamish.
Yeah, well, that's a disappointing affirmation. You've missed the point.
Yeah, okay, I just had to read another email out here, actually. It's from a guy, I think his name's Colin. Colin. He says, hi guys, I love your podcast and the humour you bring in society. I think he probably means sobriety, do you think?
No, let's just say that we're good for society.
Yeah, I like it. I love your childish banter. So as a Scotsman, here's some of our terminology of anatomy. That's it. It's nothing about sobriety.
Good.
It's about terminology of anatomy.
I love it.
I love it too. Saggy breasts equals saggy suckers. And droppy ball bag... And droopy ball bag is saggy clacker bag. Hope this helps. And give me a mention on your next podcast. Love, Colin from Dumfries in Scotland.
Wow.
I was like, that's exactly what you need to do to get on the podcast.
Is
send us local lingo for genitalia.
Less reviews of how the podcast is changing your life positively.
Yeah.
And more just random shit that's come into your life that you think might make us laugh.
That will get you on the podcast for sure. Thanks, Colin. We love you. He actually wrote back and actually sent me a picture of some saggy clackers afterwards, nice. Which I will also share.
Do you want to reply with a photo of my drippy bull bag?
No, although no. I do have my camera handy.
Hey, Colin, coming right
take
up.
Take your trousers down, Hamish. It's that special time. Our last episode was about not putting your knob on the internet, no. So I think we'll try and stick to that.
I can trust Colin.
You can trust Colin from Dumfries. Yeah, it would be viral the next day. It's funny enough because you have got something viral going on in there anyway, yeah. Haven't you? Thanks for listening, everybody.
If you're questioning your relationship with booze, you're struggling to moderate, or your hangovers are causing anxiety, it might be time to reach out for some support.
Yeah, just talk to a mate about how you're feeling, contact a local doctor, find an AA or sobriety group. Vic's got one.
Yeah, just head to www.cuppa.community.
Remember, if you're questioning yourself, it might be time to seek support.
Even though this journey can be awkward, it is definitely worth it. And if you've enjoyed the Sober Awkward podcast, don't forget to review it, rate it, and share it with your mates.
Do they have to share it with their mates?
Yeah, of course they do. I'm not doing this for nothing, Hamish. Bloody hell.
How do they share it?
I don't know, just write it on.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, as you probably know, my comedy memoir, A Thousand Wasted Sundays, is officially out. All my magnificent fuckuppery in one awkward hit. If you'd like to get your hands on a copy, it's now available from all good bookstores.
We always say all good bookstores, don't we? Yeah. Are there bad bookstores?
I don't know, it's probably ones with moody sellers.
Oh, yeah, depressed librarian folks.
Yes, yes, okay, yeah, good. So there are probably some, but we're only storing it in the good ones.
It's only made it into the goodies.
You can also get it from all good online retailers. The print version and ebook are out now, and the audiobook will be available in March. I've been writing my memoir for 5 years. It will make you laugh, cry and cringe, and hopefully inspire a few people to reconsider their relationship with booze. If you love the podcast, then I think you'll love the book, even if I do say so myself. Hamish has read it. What did you think?
I feel like I know a little bit too much about you now, to be honest, Vic. Look, I really loved it. It was hilarious and surprisingly moving, but I feel like I've seen you naked in a literary sense.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's worrying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From an emotional point of view, seriously, it wobbled my teeny weeny wooden heart, Vic.
Okay.
My teeny little wooden heart.
Well, his teeny little, his wooden heart is broken. Anyway, so if you do manage to get your filthy mitts on a copy, please do me a favour and head to goodreads.com and give me a review. Doing that will help me get it out there to those that need a bit of sober support. So there you have it. My story, unwanted warts and all.
come and get awkward with me.
Not to be too demanding or anything, but seriously, go and buy it.
Yeah,
now.
Go and buy it. Go and buy it right now.
Yeah, don't just tell your friends, buy it, and then buy your friends one or two.
Yeah, don't give them a copy. Yeah. Buy it. Yeah.
And you know what? Don't be careful where you store it. If you lose it, you can always buy another five.
Yeah, buy another one.
Yeah.